we're going to be looking at John chapter 11. And if we're familiar with the book of John, we probably know what happens in John chapter 11. Bill just read about it, about the raising of Lazarus. When Lazarus is raised from the dead, this very triumphant miracle that Jesus performs. I want us to look at that this evening and kind of just see why is this here. But before we do that, I want to lay something out as very interesting in the book of John. When we look at the Gospel of John, we have a Gospel that is very different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke. This book gives us our chronology of Jesus' ministry. It tells us what happens in the first year and so on and so forth. And we see all these days. And we see that at the beginning of chapter 12 and so on and so forth. John is where we get that time stamp of where we've got this. John also carries on more conversations that Jesus has his teachings. Where he goes in these long discourses. Like we know from chapter 6, after he has fed the 5,000 and they want to make him a king the next day, he goes into a speech about, I am the bread of life. And we just sang that song of Where Could I Go? The words that Peter utters after Jesus says, do you want to turn away also? Because many, you remember, turned away that day. That's not recorded in the other Gospels. There's all kinds of these events. Chapter 10, Jesus again is talking about things that aren't mentioned in other Gospels. It's different. But what is interesting are, when I'm teaching the Gospel of John, I like to point out four things. And I want us to see if we can see these things or portions of these things in John chapter 11 this evening. Four kind of themes of the book of John. One of them is that Jesus is God. That point is needed and is made many times throughout the book of John. And you can think about it in the very first chapter and in the way the book of John starts, right? In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. Then you go down to verse 13, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us as of the only begotten Son. So that point is made from right off the bat in chapter 1. Jesus is God. You see that all throughout this Gospel. The second thing that you're going to see very often is the mission of the Christ. What is the mission of Jesus? He's often talking about this mission. He's got a purpose. He's got something that he needs to do. And so we see this throughout. We see him saying, like, my time has not yet come. And in chapter 13, he says, now he knew that his time had come. He says, I came to do this and I came to do that. We'd see that all throughout the Gospel of John. The third thing that we'd want to point out are the images of Jesus. And we see this in many instances. You can think about Jesus says in John chapter 14 and verse 6, I am the way, the truth, and the life. In John chapter 10, he says, I am the good shepherd. And in John chapter 1, he is the true light. There are all kinds of images that are used of Jesus of the Christ throughout this. We want to keep our eyes open for those. And then the fourth thing that we want to look at is that many times the miracles that Jesus performed or the teachings, the things that Jesus said, either produce belief or unbelief. And you're going to see that in so many of the chapters of the book of John. And so with that in mind, some of these things that we see throughout the Gospel of John, I want us to look at this story that we well know. This story about Jesus raising his friend Lazarus from the dead. So let's look at our text in John chapter 11. In John chapter 11, we see the layout of this story, right? Now, a certain man was ill. Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And it was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him and said, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But Jesus, when he heard it, said, the illness does not lead to death, but it is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. We see our story. Wouldn't it be great if the thing that is said about you, if you got sick during Jesus' time, is that someone was able to send you a message and say, send Jesus a message, say, the one whom you love is ill. Someone who is very close to you, someone who you appreciate. Lazarus is someone, as we're going to see throughout this text, that Jesus loved. Lord, the one whom you love is ill. And Jesus says, yeah, he's ill. But this illness does not lead to death. Now, we know the story doesn't lead to death. He dies, but he doesn't die. He is raised. He has new life eventually. This is not unto death. He will rise again, he will tell one. He will rise again. But look also here at verse 4. Why? Why is Lazarus sick according to the words of Jesus here? This illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified in it. What's the purpose of Lazarus getting ill? It's to glorify God. And to glorify who? The Son of God. Jesus is God. This is his purpose, as he will say. He will go on to give us a little more about why he's going to raise him, why he's sick. But we know that he's sick. So verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Now when you hear that a friend or a loved one is sick and you've got the ability to go to them, do you usually delay in going? No. Man, I want to get to the hospital just as soon as I can get there, or I want to get to the house and I want to see them, especially if I know this might be the last time that I'm going to see them. I want to get there. But Jesus delays 2 days. Is it because he doesn't love Lazarus? No. It's because he's got a greater picture. He knows what is going on. He knows what is going to happen. He delays. And so he says in verse 7, then after this, he says to the disciples, let us go to Judea. 2 days later, he says, let us go to Judea. And the disciples said to him, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you. And are you going there again? Now, as we're going to see, Bethany is a village very close to Jerusalem, about 2 miles outside, very close. He says, don't you remember what happened when you were just in Jerusalem? They tried to stone him, but somehow he escaped through the crowd we see in chapter 10, and he goes off to where he is at now on the other side. You're going back there. There is danger, but yet you're going back. And notice Jesus says in verse 9, there are not 12 hours in a day. If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in it. And after saying these things, he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. Don't hide around. You just go. When you walk in the day, you walk. You don't stumble. At night, you do stumble. He says, let's go. Our friend has fallen, we go to awaken him. Verse 12. The disciples said to him, Lord, if he's fallen asleep, why do you go awake? He will recover. Excuse me. Lord, if he's fallen asleep, he will recover. Now, we know what Jesus was talking about. Now, Jesus had spoken of his death. But they thought that he meant taking rest and sleep. Isn't that right? We see somebody sick. They lay down. They think, man, they're tired. They'll get back up. They just fall asleep. They may be out for a little while. They'll get back up. They'll be dead. Said, Lord, if he's just fallen asleep, he'll recover. But isn't the term asleep often used for those who are dead in the Lord and dead in Christ? Paul talks about that in the book of 1 Thessalonians. Don't worry about those who are asleep. We shall all wake. That's a term that is used of those who die, but yet they have hope of life. They're asleep. They have hope again of life. They're asleep. So Jesus, verse 14, he says plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Did the disciples not already believe in Jesus? You'd say that they did, right? They've been following Him, and even when other disciples turned away, they still came back. But why does Jesus say He's glad they didn't go? So that they would believe. He wants to produce more belief in these disciples, in these apostles. And we're going to see that with many of our characters in the story, that they already believe Jesus. But they've got to take that belief to the next notch, to the next level. Jesus said, I'm doing this so that you may believe. And Thomas, called the twin, verse 16 says, let us go also that we may die with Him. He is not very optimistic at all about what is going to happen when they get near Jerusalem. He knows the danger that awaits them. He says, we believe, let's go. Let's go die with Him. Is that not belief in a sense of this guy? You believe in more. Let's die with Him. And so Thomas goes. And isn't it interesting that Thomas is the one that we rag on the most? Because he doubted after the Lord was raised. Man, look at this. Let's go with it. And you see the other disciples doing that. So verse 17. So when they came, he found Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. And Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off. And many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. Not a very small gathering. Apparently, Mary and Martha and Lazarus were very important to many people. That many of the Jews came and they were supporting them. They were consoling them in this loss. So verse 20. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met Him. But Mary remained seated in the house. So she goes and she meets Jesus afar. And she says to Jesus, in verse 21, here's where we want to focus for a second. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give to you. What's Martha saying? If you had been here, Lord, he wouldn't have died. You could have done something about this. You could have prevented him. I'm done. She says, now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give it to you. Does Martha believe that Jesus can do amazing things? Absolutely. But notice what Jesus responds to her. He says in verse 24, verse 23, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? If you're Martha, what's going through your head when he says this? Your brother will rise again. Well, yeah, he's going to rise again on the last day. I believe that. I believe that my brother was a good guy, that the Lord is going to take him. I believe that. Jesus, I am the resurrection. I am the one who will give him life. I am the one who will raise him from the dead. If he believed in me. Everyone who believes in me, though he die, shall live. Do you believe this? And you know Martha's answer, right? Oh, man. Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. Martha believes. She believes Jesus. You are the Christ that is coming into the world. One of our images, I am the resurrection. He is life. He gives life. And He is the Son of God. I believe it. Well, it's interesting that He says that He asks her, do you believe? And she's already showed belief. If you'd been here, my brother would not have died. Let's keep going with our story. She believes. And she goes and she sends to her sister, Mary, who stayed in the house. And when she had said this, verse 28, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." Jesus wanted to see Mary. He's calling for you, verse 29. And when she heard it, how did Mary rise? She rose quickly and went to him. Now, Jesus had not yet come into the village. He's still out there, but was in the still place where Martha had met him. And when the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. So Mary, Martha sends in this private message, kind of like a whisper in the ear. "The teacher, he wants to see you." And she gets up quickly. And all those who are in the house see her get up and they say, "She's probably going to the tomb to mourn. Let's go." They go with her. So now they get to experience this. Now they get to see. So verse 20, 32. "Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying, 'Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.'" She says the exact same thing her sister Martha says. You think they've been talking about that? You think maybe that's why they sent the message to him in the first place? Is that if he's here, he won't die? They believe that Jesus could have done something about it. "If you had been here, my brother would not have died." Verse 33, "When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. He looks and his friend is crying, and the friends of the friends are crying because their brother and their friend has died. And Jesus looks and he himself is sorrowful by this. He says, 'Where have you laid him?' He said, 'Lord, come and see.'" And here's our shortest verse. Jesus wept. Can you imagine walking up to that tomb? He knows what is going to happen. He knows what he is going to do. Yet he still feels. He's still human. He is, even though he is God and he's got all this power, he still feels for this friend. And so the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them, I believe mockingly, said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have also kept this man from dying?" The way the language is worded there is that you've got some who said, "See how he loved him." And you got some nose in the crowd who almost kind of sneer and say, "Man, if this man is who he said he was, couldn't he have kept this guy from dying?" Not in the same way that Mary and Martha came to him. "Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died." The question in my mind, right, is why do they believe that Jesus could have prevented him from dying when he was sick? And we can think of many different stories. But there's a story in the book of John that I want us to hold our finger in John 11. I want us to look at John chapter 4. Remember, there's this the second miracle that Jesus does is recorded. And it is in Cana of Galilee, same place where he did his first miracle that we have recorded, turning water to wine in chapter 2. But there was an official whose son was ill in verse 46. So verse 47. "When this man had heard that Jesus had come from Judea to Galilee, he went to him and asked him to come down and heal his son, for he was at the point of death." Same situation as Lazarus. So Jesus said to him, "Unless you see signs and wonders, you will not believe." And the official said to him, "Sir, come down before my child dies." And Jesus said to him, "Go, your son will live." And the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went on his way. And he was going down, the servants met him and told him that his son was recovering. So he asked them that hour when he began to get better. And they said, "Yesterday, at the seventh hour, the fever left him." And the father knew that was the hour when Jesus had said to him, "Your son will live." and he himself believed, he and all his household. They had heard about this. Jesus had kept people who were at the point of death from dying. But did Jesus have to go to that guy's house? He just said the words. He probably knew about that. If you had been here, he would not have died. There's a reason why he wasn't there, right? It's that they may believe, to show. Now notice verse 41, back in John chapter 11. I'm sorry, verse 38. Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and the stone lay against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." And Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days." And Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God?" Martha is now kind of having a little bit of doubt. I know he's going to rise on the last day. He says, "Did I tell you if you believe, you would see the glory of God?" So 41. They took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and he said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I know that you always hear me. But I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." Why did Jesus do all this? Why did Jesus now speak to his Father and pray to his Father in the front of all of these people? These many Jews who were there consoling Mary and Martha and all of those who were there. Why? So that they would believe that he was sent by the Father. Because he goes on to say, he says, "Father, I knew," verse 42, "I knew that you always hear me." He knows that his Father hears him. He knows that he's going to give him what it is that he asked. Just as Martha said, "God will give you whatever you ask." He knew that. And he could have just asked in his head, "Come out, Lord, God, Father, heal him, raise him." And so that these others would believe. He said it aloud. So verse 43. When he said these things, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the man who died came out, his hands and his feet bound with linen strips, and his face unwrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." What's our outcome? Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed him. That is why Jesus performs this miracle. So that they would believe him. And some did. Many did. But verse 46. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. And it wasn't a, "Oh man, look what we got. You won't believe what this Jesus guy did." I don't envision it. But it's more of, "We got a problem." Because notice what the chief priests do in verse 47. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered to council and said, "What are we to do? For this man performs many signs. And if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And the Romans will come and take away our place and our nation." What are they afraid of? That if he keeps doing these things that they cannot deny, that everyone will believe. That they will no longer have a position, and that the Romans will come and they will take away the nation too. So from that day forward, right, they can't have this guy walking around doing these things and the people believing him. They decided that they would get him. So Caiaphas stands up, the high priest that year. He says, "You know nothing at all," verse 49. Verse 50, he said, "Do you not understand that it's better for one man to die for the people and not the whole nation should perish?" He did not say this on his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation. See his mission? That he would die for the nation? He would die for the people. Caiaphas is saying this and he doesn't have any idea what he's saying. Like we talked about Pilate a few weeks ago, saying, "Behold your king." He doesn't know what he's saying, but yet he's saying what is true. Caiaphas is saying, "Don't you know it's better that one man died than the whole nation?" He died for the sins of the people. That was his mission. He came to take away our sins. And this event helped speed that process up. Because verse 52, "And not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who were scattered abroad, so that from that day on they made plans to put him to death." This is not just for the Jews. This is for all the children of God scattered about. This is amazing. This guy doesn't know what he's saying. He is saying, this is what Christ is going to do. He will die. Better for one man to die than the whole nation. So from that day, they sought to put him to death. So notice again verse 54. The disciples are afraid at the beginning to go to Jerusalem because they just tried to stone him. It says, let us go and die with him. But notice what we've got at the end as well. 54. "Therefore, Jesus no longer walked openly among the Jews. But he went from there to the region near the wilderness to a town called Ephraim, and there they stayed with the disciples." Jesus goes. He can't walk openly anymore, which is something we saw in chapter 7 of John. We see in all kinds of places. He could not walk openly because they were trying to kill him. But it wasn't his time. So the question and the statement that I kind of want to get across is, what is this for us? Why is this miracle, this story recorded? We see, as Bill read in chapter 12, that people hear about it. And in fact, chief priests, as we see, and they not only want to kill Jesus, they want to kill Lazarus. And part of the big commotion for the triumphal entry is because Jesus healed Lazarus and everyone wants to see it. They hear that he's coming. This is the big culminating event of sorts. Why is it recorded for us? I'm here to say, and I'm here to suggest, that it's no different than any of the other miracles that are in the Gospel of John. I want you to look in John chapter 20. Turn with me to John chapter 20. I want us to read a verse that we well know, two verses that we well know. We'll see if we can't see this in John chapter 11. John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, where the author is telling us why he wrote the miracles that he did. Verse 30. "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name." Why did John record this miracle? So that we believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing in Him, we might have life in His name. Do we see that anywhere in John chapter 11? Look back in John chapter 11, verse 25. As Jesus is talking with Martha, He said, I believe He'll raise on the last day. And Jesus says, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" And she said, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, Son of God, who is coming into the world." See how that fits right together in what John's purpose and what John's plan is? There are a lot of cool details in this story, in this account of John, that John gives of Jesus raising his friend Lazarus. The question is, do we believe in the resurrection of Jesus? that Jesus will give us life. How often do we think about eternity? Okay, we don't know what kind of body we're going to have, but we know that it will be better because it will be a spiritual body, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15. And we know it will happen in the twinkling of an eye. But in reality, what do we think about when we think about a friend or a loved one who has passed on? Do we think about, they're going to miss out? Or, wow, they're going to be raised on the last day. And it's not because of anything that they did. That's my belief in Jesus. Now, how many times do we kind of want to think about, man, I've done all this, so Jesus is going to save me. Like, I've done all this good in my life. I've not done all this bad stuff. I've done some really good stuff. And so when I die, I'm going to go to heaven. Why are you going to go to heaven? Through Jesus. Through Jesus raising you from the dead, as you'll say in chapter 5. All those who are in the tomb will hear my voice. Some will be raised to the resurrection of life, and others to the resurrection of judgment. But all will hear his voice. You think it's just going to magically appear? Jesus wants to give us life. And we must not think that it's because, man, I've done all this good stuff, that I will be raised. Jesus is our resurrection. Believe in me. And our belief can always grow. These disciples, their belief needed to grow. Martha's belief needed to grow. These other Jews around, their belief needed to grow. Our belief needs to grow. We never get to the point where we say, man, I don't know if I can believe anything else more about Jesus. I believe he's the Christ, and I believe he's the Son of God. But do we trust him? Do we trust him as Philip did, in a way? Say, yeah, let's go die with him. Yeah. He says to do it, I'm going to do it. That's when we know if we believe Jesus, if we want to follow him, if we go and we do what he says, that's when we believe him. That's when we trust him. And the scriptures are given so that we can know that we can have life. It's not, I think I'll be raised. But I know that by believing in his name, he will get life. So there's a second point that I want to draw. And this is a very minute point. The main point is that Jesus can give life. That we would believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. The minute point that I want to make is from an instance that we see with Mary. And it's something that is introduced at the beginning of John chapter 11. Verse 2. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother was sick. Go down to now verse 32. Now when Mary came to Jesus, where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying, where do we see her? What's the text saying about where she's at? She's washed his feet with her hair. We see that recorded in chapter 12. She's low. She is at his feet. She falls before him, weeping apparently, here in John chapter 11 when she goes and she meets him. She is at his feet. And doesn't that remind you of another instance in Mary's life? In Luke, the 10th chapter. Look in Luke chapter 10. It's our introduction, in a way, to Mary and Martha. This is a story where they are thrown on the scene in Mark chapter 10. Verse 38. Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she also had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listen to His teaching. Where is Mary at? She is at the Lord's feet. She knows that she needs Him. She realizes that she is a sinful woman, in a sense, in John chapter 12. She's not worthy of Him. She will wipe His feet with her hair. Don't we need to be at the feet of Jesus? We need to be humbling ourselves before Him and listening to His teachings and trusting in Him. Yet sometimes we come with a puffed up chest to Jesus. And we say, in the form of the Pharisee, God, thank you, I'm not lying. So and so. But yet we don't realize that we should be like Mary and that we should be like Peter. When Peter, after the great catch of fish, falls at Jesus' feet and he says, depart from me, for I am a wicked man, O Lord. It is a privilege and an honor to go before the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And many times we just treat that like it's nothing. That we can just go and talk to Jesus. We don't have to think anything about it. And then if Jesus says something that I don't really like, I just say, you know what, I'm not a big fan of that right now. We need to realize our place. He is the teacher. He is the Lord. He is the Christ. We are small. We need to follow Him. Do we believe Him? He can give us life. He is the only one who can give life. We need to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. And that by believing we might have life. And we need to realize our place before the one who can save us. And He doesn't have to do it. But yet He wants to. If we would just believe Him, trust Him, follow Him. So maybe you're subject to the Lord's invitation this evening that you want to submit your life to Christ by baptism. You want to follow Him. Why don't you do that this evening? Or maybe you need to make some things known to the brethren about some sin. Why don't you do that as well, if that's what you need. Whatever the case may be, why don't you come now as we stand and as we sing.